life might hand you budgets, schedules, family, and responsibility. But driving shouldn't be just another chore.
We're here to help you find a car you love. Something that fits your budget and your needs, but is fun to drive and makes you look back. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul, and this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
I realized, since our last podcast, that you're very right about something.
I am.
You've been making fun of me because I keep showing up at the podcast and going, I have a story for you, and it relates to the Lotus.
You have another
one, don't you? And I'm back again, and I'm sorry, but it's the Lotus lessons, man.
Did it blow up?
It didn't. It didn't.
Is it underwater in a pool somewhere?
No. It's actually better than ever, honestly.
Okay, good.
But here's what I realized. This weekend, I did something. I know, this is the sentence that happens with me in the Lotus. I did something I've never done before. But what it was in this case was I took out most of the interior of a car.
Okay.
Now, the Lotus doesn't have a lot of interior anyway.
Is this your first time taking an interior out of a car?
Yes. Why would I have ever done this before? I have never had a reason to remove seats. I don't do sound deadening. I'm not a stereo guy. Why would I take seats out of a car?
I was a stereo guy. I was totally into stereos.
Okay, sure. So I've never done that. But I've told you about the cursed alarm.
Yes. I've heard the alarm. I've sat in your living room listening to the alarm.
Listen to it randomly chirp. But A week ago, it literally, this is not a joke, this is the thing people joke about, it literally woke me up at 3 in the morning because it randomly went off.
And unlike an alarm clock, you can't smash it or throw it across the room.
Totally. I jumped out of bed, still foggy, and I was like, is that my alarm? My wife went, yes. And I'm running down the stairs. I get to the bottom of the stairs in my house, and it stops. And that was the end. It was like, I don't care if it's ever going to work right again. It's coming out. But that meant I had to take out both seats and everything along the firewall, mid-engine car, everything along the firewall behind the passenger seats of the car.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had to do that. And that actually worked out okay. And then I posted this picture on Facebook of what looked like a bomb in the dashboard, which was actually the alarm that I had to pull the plug out of that. And I can't tell you how happy I am.
And you figured out which wire to cut?
It's all done. No,
what color was it?
I actually unplugged the alarm itself. The actual plug for the alarm is unplugged now.
So nothing got cut. It's actually still okay.
That's the thing. I did every step in a way that if I wanted, I could retrofit it all back.
See, this is good.
Instantly.
This is good.
I could just plug everything back in the appropriate order, and it would theoretically, I'm going to put this in air quotes, you can't see, work again.
Right. So it can wake you up at 3
now,
in the morning again.
Exactly. But now I have a car. Like, remember those days when four-heart cars had alarm and you locked the door? Remember those days?
Weird.
This is the car I have. It's very strange.
I know.
But here's why I'm so excited. I didn't realize this until I was done with the project. I've been kind of on edge the last 10 days because I just don't know when the car is going to freak out. I love driving it. But whenever it's parked at down when I'm working in Salt Lake as an editor, when I'm home, when I'm sleeping, when my son's trying to go to bed,
right.
I don't know if it's just going to just randomly lose its mind in the garage.
That's got to be really disconcerting.
So now it's fixed. I'm sleeping like a baby. It's the best thing ever.
It's like the fire alarms in your house that are hardwired, but they have the battery backup and the battery starts to go bad.
Yeah.
And it just chirps once.
Uh-huh.
And you don't know where in the house it was.
And you don't know if that means it's really going bad
or
if it just hiccuped. Yeah.
And just nothing. And then 1 a.m., chirp.
Uh-huh. And my wife at first was like, why are you so excited about this? Because she's been annoyed by it too. But I said, you don't understand. I've been constantly on edge about, is my car going to lose its mind? And I have to explain it to somebody.
Oh my gosh.
And now it doesn't. Now it's just a car with locks. I know that sounds so like 1960, but I'm thrilled.
Congratulations.
I guess so.
Suppose.
Who knew?
That's awesome.
Taking out seats on a weekend and ripping out an alarm would be that therapeutic, but it has been.
Man,
Lotus lessons for the day. There you go.
Rip my interior out and I unplug stuff.
Wow, I feel better.
I feel better. Well, guys, welcome back to the podcast. We're thrilled you're along. As always, we've got a bit of a different podcast because of a particular question from Alec Vando on Facebook, who wrote in, and we promised you, Alec, that we would get to this.
A couple podcasts ago, fantastic questions, but we both kind of gulped and went, that's going to take some time.
It did. I spent this afternoon going through stuff, going through my ideas. The question was, in no particular order, what are cars you must drive? Mm-hmm. And you and I kind of debated back and forth. Does this mean cars that we want to drive? Mm-hmm. We can, you know, you could interpret it a couple
what's
different
ways.
What's on
our must drive in the future list? You could read it that way,
what
for
is
sure.
Cars you must drive. But I think what we settle on is cars you must drive. Given the chance, cars that exist now that you can drive, that are out there,
these are our
that you need to go experience.
It's a greatest hits list. It's a, if you ever have the chance, drive these. That's the must drive we're talking about. And I love Alec for writing in and giving us that inspiration, because it's a fun thing to sit down and think about. For all the stuff we've driven, what's the stuff where it's like, you have to get in one of these. You have to get why this car's cool.
It's like the show a while back, Alonzo Bowden, the comedian, who did the 100 cars, I think you must drive.
Yeah, 1001 car things to do or something.
Something like that. Yeah. It kind of reminded me of that. But this is based on our own experience, of course.
Of course.
And caveat, this is not exhaustive or comprehensive in any way. Subject to change. But as it stands right now, you know, subject to changes and additions.
Of course.
But hey, it just gets you thinking, and it's definitely based on our experiences, man, you have got to go experience this.
For sure. I got kind of nuts with this. I was telling you that earlier that I broke this down into all kinds of categories.
But
the primary category for me is I wanted to keep my list below 50 grand. And that could be the car is available new for less than 50 grand. But it could also be the car was 100 and now you can get it for less than 50. But I wanted the majority of my comments to be less than 50 grand. And then I did do a little bit of an above 50K kind of highlights list. But I focused below 50 grand, and I also then grouped it by drive wheels.
Oh, you did?
To keep me from just having this weird list. I tried to be about four things per drive wheel is kind of where I did, just to kind of rein myself in a bit.
Interesting. I categorize this entire list in differently, completely.
Of course
differently.
You did. This is what's great about what we do. Yeah, go on.
So mine was broken up into emotions. And that is each
amazing.
Car eliciting a specific feel to the driving experience, and therefore that relates to where the engine is in the car.
I like this. Good.
I mean, really, there's only four powertrain layouts: front engine, front mid, rear mid, and rear. Unless you remember that Audi Aztec concept from the 90s that had the engine on the side of the car and you were on the other side. So that doesn't exist. So we'll go with four.
Okay. All right. Wow. You and I talked about how we were going to tackle this earlier, that it was going to be cars that we recommend. And then now you've gone completely differently than I approached it, which I love that. Let's go on.
I mean, it's because when we're on camera driving various cars, the feel going through a particular corner or something like that, we spout off and go nuts about whatever that feeling is.
And
I kind of curated it. I read back through the list. I didn't go too far back in terms of age of cars. I mean, I didn't go back to the 70s or 60s or anything like that.
Sure.
But this is just, generally speaking, modern cars that you can get into, you can afford. The cars that are just fun, and each one of them has its own thing about it.
I think that's great. And the other key thing, it sounds like you kind of did the same thing I did, and that is there's really not a whole point in listing off a bunch of unicorns here. If you have no chance in your life of bumping into one or ever even talking about getting in one, we can say it's awesome, but so?
Yeah, Mitsubishi Stereons are not on my list, actually.
All right.
Weird cars from the 90s.
All right, so where do you want to jump in?
Let's start with the Porsches.
Okay, all right.
Let's just get it done.
Okay, for those of you that are drinking, I'm apologizing right now, because Paul's just starting with Porsche. I'm sure we'll say proclivity at least once, and you'll be on the floor in the next 10 minutes, and you'll never even hear what I said, but that's fine.
Well, I had to. I mean,
that's fine.
I categorized this as the Porsches.
Okay, of course you did.
And so I jumped in. If you have not seen our 50 years of the 911, this was based on, my selections were based on all the driving that you and I did in that film.
Tons of it, yes.
And I have to start with the late 80s 3.2 Carrera.
We
drove that again recently, as a matter of fact.
We did. Yep.
Talked about it a lot, marveled over this car. And I just remember driving this. As a matter of fact, I've been looking at used ones.
All bad. I will give you one encouragement, though.
Okay.
You're looking at as they're starting to come down.
Which I find fascinating. I'm actually intrigued by this. They are dropping.
When we did our film, they were at the peak of madness. I mean, just the cars
peak
that honestly shouldn't cost what they did cost twice what they should. And now I feel like they're settling out. I saw on Bring a Trailer today, there was a 993 but a base 993.
Okay. All right.
You know, 3 years ago, that would have been like a $70,000 car. It looked like it was going to sell for something like 30 or 40.
That's encouraging.
Which, okay. Because the 993 prices were they were insane is what they were.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it was the last of the air cooled. So, yeah. Anyway, go on.
As a matter of fact, the 993 is the second car on my list of Porsches here.
Yeah, yeah.
993, again, even though it's the same recipe, you know, the rear engine, we're talking 911s, it elicits a different feel to it.
A little bit, a little bit.
And so the 993 is on the list, and definitely the 991, 911 in either manual or PDK.
Mm-hmm.
And the PDK comes into question because there's so many folks that have not experienced this and, frankly, are amazed. Mm-hmm. There's really no transmission like it on the market.
For sure, for sure.
So I will say a 911, 991 with a PDK.
It's a transmission that makes believers of people. That's the thing we've discovered. Yeah.
Yeah. If you come in with an open mind and, you know, all that stuff.
For sure,
so.
For sure.
The Caymans are on the list. The 987 Cayman, so the first generation Cayman that I had.
Yeah.
And the 981 Cayman S or GTS. Mm-hmm. That's on my list.
Shocking.
Course, the car I own.
Because you've owned both of those, so it makes sense, but I see that.
And a car I've also owned, a 928. So I went with a second generation Porsche 928. S4 GT or GTS.
Those are such cool cars.
They're so different. I mean, you could say, oh, it's the German Corvette, but they don't act like it. It's got the Weissach rear axle, and the way it handles and holds the road is very not like a GT car, even though it is a GT car.
Okay, okay.
It's very strange
and
quite nice. Transaxle, so the weight balance is there.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the cars. We could, again, go nuts. But I'm going to stay not super comprehensive, but these are cars that you might know somebody with these cars.
Sure.
Get in this car. Any of them.
I'm gonna jump off your Porsche list and go down one of the rabbit trails that I have here because I think it connects pretty well. I had a category after – and again, I broke mine down by driveline. But then I realized there were some cars that I wanted to include that I didn't want to put in those driveline segments. And I put it under a category that I called Now I Get It. Meaning these are oddball cars. These are oddball cars. But if you can get into them and drive them, you should because you'll understand why people keep talking about them as being unique or awesome or special.
You finish your drive and you get out and you scream to the world, now I get it.
Exactly.
Right.
And one of the ones on that list is why I want to connect them. One of the ones on that list is if you ever get a chance – and I say this as the non-Porsche guy of the two of us, watch our 50 Years of 9/11 film because I come in really not getting it. And I get out of the film.
You had an open mind, though, which is great.
No, but I wanted to learn. And I got out of the film understanding it. Still not, you know, paddling in the pool of Porsche as you do, which is hard to say. But really understanding it. And on that Now I Get It list is an air-cooled 911.
Okay, just, you're saying any air-cooled.
Just get in an air-cooled 911 because the modern ones are fantastic cars, but there is something unique and special about those air-cooled 911s. And I would recommend get in the G Series, get in something from at least the mid to late 80s, ideally with the G50 transmission that was a superb transmission they upgraded to in the mid 80s.
Yep.
You mentioned the Carrera 3.2. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about that era and onward, on through the 964s and 993s. Doesn't matter. But even if you got into the early G Series, like the 70s cars, bring it, okay? Mm-hmm. So an air-cooled 911, just because you'll come out with a different perspective. I know I did. So that's on my Now I Get It list. But on that list as well.
So funny.
Now I get it. You should drive an RX-8.
Oh, really?
Just because it's the most modern rotary so far.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a rotary fan, but after driving the RX-8 on a few occasions, I did have that Now I Get It moment. I understand why people love them. And it is such a different engine feel. It's a completely unique engine feel. And here's this chassis that handles really well, has a surprising amount of space, with this just unicorn of an engine. Mm-hmm. And because they're cheap and not precious, get in an RX-8 somehow and drive it just to go, okay, now I get the rotary thing.
Yeah. No, the RX-8 was on my list. I feel like I've got too many cars on my list now.
We both do.
This is
and
nuts.
Also on the – while because while I'm here, I'll just stay on the Now I Get It. The E46 M3, if you get a chance –
oh, yeah.
Because that's the one that is the – and pardon me referencing our other film, but that's the one that is the BMW M3 icon. When people think BMW M3, they're kind of unknowingly, I think, talking about the E46 M3.
Mm-hmm.
It's naturally aspirated. It's a brilliant inline six engine with a really, really high red line.
Mm-hmm.
The steering is magical. It's really, really good. That is a car that I think when people picture what a BMW is supposed to feel like – it's that car. It's kind of the pinnacle of that. So I think the E46 M3, if you get a chance, for sure. Two more on this list.
Classic, it could be a long list, though.
No, no, no. It could. Classic Datsun, the original Zs, 240, 260.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just so you kind of understand what we're talking about.
No kidding.
Okay. Get in one of those early, early ones from the 70s. One of those. And then the most modern car on this list is the Mustang GT350.
That's definitely on my
because list. Because of that engine and the fact that it takes the Mustang in a little bit of a new direction, further towards sports car, while having a very, very unique engine. So that's my now I get it list. And now I can go into more realistic things. But I just, you got me there from the 911, so I wanted to jump in.
I like that. I mean, I categorize these into marks of cars. I mean, the manufacturers.
Okay.
And then, you know, wrote down, oh, I've got too much on here. So I'm going to come back to BMWs, and I'm going to say any 2002, most likely from the early 70s.
Okay, yeah.
But any 2002.
We have a fast blast of that coming up. It's a pretty cool little car.
Yeah, we do. It's revelatory for me, just like those early 911s were. It's the smells definitely go along with the experience.
Classic cars have a smell to them. It's really fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, you're smelling...
And I mean that in a great way. I know that's a weird sentence, but I mean that in a great way.
You know, plastics and leather and oil and all that stuff mixed together, they just smell a certain way. I mean, you're smelling metal or burnt metal or formerly burnt metal or, you know,
yeah,
all that stuff. And so that was very revelatory car for me. You're going to have to watch that Fast Blast when it comes out. Sticking with BMWs,
okay.
2011 1M. This is list,
yep.
Baby. This is so different. It's so tiny, and in keeping with that 2002 theme, it's, you know, we added a ton of power, and we still, as you like to say, this, come see what we built. Hey, everybody, come see.
It's a science project. It's a fantastic science project, but it absolutely is.
And then, of course, you know, again, referencing our Icon film from last year, as a matter of fact, most all of the M3s are on my list for different reasons, though. They go up in size, but the M2 recently on track on the ring was brilliant.
It was awesome.
I really enjoyed
it. It was really, really fun.
And it wasn't even the 6-speed. It was the DCT. It was just...
But there's enough going on at the ring that, you know what, I'm okay with the DCT for the madness that is the ring. I will admit that.
Yeah, the E30 M3 is on there.
Sure.
For a few different reasons. The 3.2 Carrera kind of feel in that car, E46, the E92 cannot be ignored.
It's a cool car.
That
we talk about it a lot.
It's just ridiculous. I mean, I'm finding those for $25,000. Like 08, 09.
It's a lot of car for that amount of money.
25 grand.
Yeah, a lot of car for that money.
I mean, we used to suggest WRXs for 25 grand, and now we can add E92 M3s. It's a little scary.
Yeah.
And then finally the F80 M3, the brand new one. I love the tech. I love everything that's going on with that car.
I've never connected with it as much as you do. But
everything. Love that car.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I'm going to stay with my engine layouts, but since you're dealing in BMWs, I will jump to front engine, rear wheel drive, what I described as the classic setup. So these are the cars, as far as I'm concerned, that you should get into that are that setup.
Okay.
The BMW 1M is on that list, which is why I'm jumping there now.
All right.
It's one of those. But you do need to drive. I know I've said it a million times. I'm going to keep saying it because it's true. You need to drive one of the 86 twins.
Absolutely.
That's on the list over here, too. For all of its power issues, for all of the things that people love to give it internet hate for, honestly, when I had that car, I would put people into it and make them believers. They would get out and be like, okay, all right, I'm understanding why that's so well set up. People that have never driven rear-wheel drive before, and I've had this conversation, that will kind of throw shade on the 86s about, oh, I've never driven rear-wheel drive, but I hear those are terrible for all of the... Go drive it. Go drive it.
Yeah, yeah.
So the 86 twins, and then pick a generation of the Mazda Miata. Pick an MX-5. I don't care. Go drive one.
Absolutely.
Even if you decide you want to walk away. I know you, Paul, are not as big a fan of them as I am. I'm a pretty big fan. If I could fit, they'd be better. But I know
I like the NC a lot.
But you appreciate them.
I do.
I feel like you are, for Miatas, where I am with 911s.
That's a good way of putting it.
Where you can appreciate them, but you're not drawn to them. And I think that I've always got that vibe from you. I really like an MX-5. If I had about 3 more inches of headroom, I'd buy one. But
you're good at taking seats out now.
I am.
You can perform seat mods.
And I'll go one further.
Drop the
seat. A lot of guys that want more headroom, I'm not kidding, they will take the Miata seats out and bolt the Elise seats in.
You're kidding me.
That's a common mod.
Well, good thing you have an Elise, so now you can buy a Mazda and take the seats out of the Elise.
I make quick release seats. Perfect. Done.
Just park your Elise because you don't need that anymore because you'll have a Miata with Elise seats.
That's ridiculous. That's point, ridiculous. Right? But no, so the MX-5 is definitely on this classic rear-wheel drive, you have to drive it list, the 1M. And then two that are kind of fringe on here, but I like them because they go here and I think you're surprised at what you can get them for. The Aston Martin Vantage.
Wow.
And the Jaguar F-Type.
Also good.
Because you can get them for less than 50 now. And because they have a unique character in this world. I would say the 86, mm-hmm. the Miata, and the 1M kind of do that setup perfectly. It's like, this is what this setup can be.
Okay, but yet, I see the grouping.
But yet the Vantage and the F-Type take that idea and add their own little spin on it that gives them a different personality, which is why I put them there too.
For comparison purposes, since we're kind of at the top end right now, I need to bring up the Nissan GT-R.
Okay. The good.
Most recent generation, R35.
Sure.
Nissan GT-R.
Yeah, yeah.
It comes from me remembering on our road tour. So on our pilgrimage trip that we recently took and last year, we take a road tour day between the two track days.
Uh-huh.
And we are kindly provided with a lot of cars to get people rotating through on the road. So do street drives and some Autobahn driving of these cars. And this year included a 2017 Nissan GT-R.
Mm-hmm.
And I got in, I was leading off for just a little bit, and all those memories came flooding back of, oh, yes, yes, the GTR, the car that turns you into a hero.
For sure.
And you need to drive this car because of that feeling. You need to understand what your limits and your taste for a car that does so much for you.
Mm-hmm.
You need to go understand that and drive that for this reason.
If you have a chance, that's a great call. I actually don't have that on my list, but I think it's a great, great recommendation.
It's more of a, not sorbet and car term, but more
It's a reference. It's a fantastic reference car.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so you can go from these, you know, rear engine, you know, the early cars and then, you know, wow, so mechanical. And then all the way to this GTR going, okay, so this is where modern car building is taking us.
Mm-hmm. And you bring it up. The interesting thing about when we have like the guys that climbed out of the GTR that day, it was interesting to hear their commentary because it was about that person's, I'm going to say it again, that person's proclivities, how do they come to driving completely affected their connection to the GTR. And some people that want raw and mechanical and informative got out of the GTR and were like, it's impressive, but I don't like it. Other guys that want the car to be this unbelievable machine, we had to peel them out of it. They couldn't get enough time in it. And so it's interesting how much your personal biases, if you will, your personal preferences in driving affect the GTR, but nobody gets out of it and goes, that's not impressive. Because it's just impressive.
Right. And you find yourself going through corners that are so easy and you look down, I'm really going that fast?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
This car can do that. You're joking me. So, yeah, that's on the list for that reason, but not in terms of price category or anything, but just all-wheel drive.
Fantastic reference.
Madness, nutter. Yeah.
I like it.
That was on the list. So we can come back to a little bit more realistic cars, but, of course, the Hellcat is on my list, too.
Well, that's in my over 50
category.
Because
of that engine.
Yeah.
Again, a reference point, a benchmark. Mm-hmm. You need to taste this and then go away.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that you need to own one. Maybe.
I had the Hellcat Charger on my over 50 list.
Did you?
And I have it there for exactly what you're talking about. I think you walk away, kind of like the GTR. I think those are connected in thinking. You walk away going, I didn't know that was possible. Because the Charger is this huge family vehicle, massive family vehicle.
Yeah.
And yet you have this absolute bomb under the hood that is so easy access and wickedly powerful. And, you know, license stealing in instance, you know, I think you kind of have to get out and you'll instantly feel like, do you connect with that or not? But everybody, if you have the chance, it's a fantastic experience to walk away from and just have as a reference. I think that's great.
I mean, you know, from a superhero character, it's Hulk. It smashes everything. There's no mystery as to how it performs its thing. Wow, you got that much power, that tiny car. No. It's a huge engine.
Yeah, in a huge car.
You understand how it makes power, but you're still boggled by what it does.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
That's on my list there. All right, so coming back up to Fords.
Okay.
Got to talk about Fords.
For sure.
And you mentioned the GT350, which is on my list. But at the very bottom end, since we're not getting the next-gen Fiesta ST, They're inexpensive, and they're such a revelatory car for being front-engine, front-wheel drive.
Yes, yes.
Fantastic. We haven't really touched on front-wheel drive cars yet.
I have my list, and the Fiesta's on it.
Is yes. it? I'm touching on this. We could argue Focus ST, but I want to just stay Fiesta ST right now mm-hmm. because it's so small, mm-hmm. and because of what it is, it's just, again, a car on the opposite end of the scale that you get out and you think, that car can do that and make mm-hmm. me feel so happy and delighted
Completely
about
agree.
Driving?
Completely agree.
How is this possible? Mm-hmm. That's why I like that car.
Yeah.
And I do have the Focus RS on there just because it's such a different car from Fiesta to Mustang. And
yeah.
Again, they've done different things with this chassis and this platform and added power here and, you know, the way it sorts power through its wheels. Mm-hmm. Very mm-hmm. different car. And that's on my list as well, Focus RS.
That's good. That's good. I have the Fiesta ST in front-wheel drive category, chasing the front-wheel drive trend for a minute. I was trying to think about front-wheel drives that either defy what you expect or do it really well. And so the Fiesta okay. ST, I think, defies what you expect. You look at its tiny little – it's a little tiny micro hatch. It's front-wheel drive. How can this be fun? And everybody sure. gets out and goes, wow, that's well done.
Yeah.
So that's on there. We don't get it here, but every time we drive it, we're impressed. The Renault Megane, the generation that's just ending.
That's
it's actually just been replaced. But the one that we drive at the ring every year, every time I drive that, I just think, well, no wonder they use this as the – this is your beginner car. And it's mm-hmm. not a base car either. They
no,
have cars below it in their lineup. It's like a third of the way up their lineup, and that's the car they recommend people drive the ring in for the first time.
It's quite a good platform for that.
And it's really impressive. It's the Megane. I think it's the 265 RS, I think, is what we drive. So mm-hmm. that's the horsepower rating. But very impressive because you see in a larger size now, almost, if you would, almost the – it's almost a midsize car.
Mm-hmm.
So it's much bigger than the Fiesta ST, but does that front-wheel drive chassis so well without torque steer and with a lot of just great dynamics. And then I have to put the benchmark in here. The Volkswagen GTI.
That's on my list too.
Because it's – we have sometimes gotten hate because we don't think it's the greatest car on the planet. But it's one of those cars that when you put it against things that have their hair on fire, wear their personality on the sleeve – it's very demure by comparison and isn't
sure.
quite as fun.
Sure.
But there's a reason this is the standard bearer. If you want to just have well-sorted front-wheel drive, hatchback shape, start at the GTI. You will understand so much right there. I have to mention it.
No kidding.
And then I have an oddball, a used oddball in this category.
Okay. All right.
The Acura TL from 03 to 08.
What?
That's just a really solid front-wheel drive sedan. And
okay.
they're now crazy cheap. There are other options
I'm
out there.
Shocked that's on your list.
I'm putting it out there because I was just trying to think about what are front wheel drives that when I drove them, they resonated with me. And of course, I drove that one a while ago, the first time. But it was just, you know, after driving Accords and Camrys and front wheel drive sedans, yeah. sedans that were fine to get into that Acura TL and to find that it was really well set up and was still good looking, normal front wheel drive sedan. I just thought, there's something special there. It was a special moment at Acura, I feel like. So I have to put it in here.
Well, I'll jump off and keep going with the Honda theme there.
Great.
And let's talk about two. You might see them coming. The S2000.
For sure.
Front mid-engine car. If you don't believe me, open the hood and check. Bring a tape measure.
Look at where the axle is. Yep.
It's very close, but it still is. The S2000, of course, is a benchmark car for us.
Absolutely.
I don't know of any other car, really. I mean, you can't even hold Miatas up to them because they don't have the power the S2000 has.
Fair.
We've always
fair.
Said, you know, if this only had what an S2000 has. The FRS, the GT86, mm-hmm. doesn't have what the S2000 did. I mean, that was decade ago or more.
And it has a very unique engine as well.
Yeah. It's really astounding car to drive. And so revelatory again from a weight distribution handling mm-hmm. perspective. Mm-hmm. And you feel that. You know you're in a special car. It really is. And they're so inexpensive now.
Well, and also it's got electric steering.
Yes.
Before that
which
was an
nobody
issue.
Realizes.
Before that was an issue, before any of us were railing against it.
Uh-huh.
It has electric power steering. And you know what? You drive it and you don't care. You just don't care.
Yeah.
It never even crosses your mind.
You know, I think it'll be the endless battle from here on out. I mean, electric power steering is here to stay.
Absolutely.
And you think, oh, well, that's just a recent thing. No, the S2000 was doing it over a decade ago.
I know.
So you know, that's a pretty unbeatable car in terms of what we like.
And the fact they
out.
Did it so well and nobody really complained about it.
Yeah.
You know,
nobody even mentioned it then. And so the other Honda on the list, it's the NSX.
For sure.
The first gen NSX, you and I are looking forward to getting in the second generation. Yeah. But that first generation, again, such a benchmark car from a mid-engine perspective. It, you could drive it like an Accord, all those things that we love it for. And they are fairly inexpensive, although I do kind of think they're creeping back up now.
I think that's pretty possible.
Depending on the car, depending on the condition. But if you ever have a chance to drive a neighbor's Acura NSX, please jump in.
Yeah, there's something
please
special
go
there
drive
for sure.
It.
But both of those cars that you're listing, though, the S2000 and the NSX, that was Honda at the top of their sports car game.
Really was. And I think, you know, Honda's bringing some cool stuff out. You know, they've got a lot of stuff in the pipeline. They've got the new Civic Type R. But they were at the top of their game. They were just, I mean, you think Honda and you think those two cars. So those are definitely on my list for benchmark purposes.
Excellent.
Well, guys, give us a quick break. We'll keep going about all these cars that you've got to drive. If you ever have a chance, give us a quick break. We'll be right back.
Podcast One Sports presents Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. Every Tuesday, you can hear Jack Harbaugh.
We're going to attack this day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Jim Harbaugh.
What the hell's going on around here?
And JT Rogan share their stories from on and off the field. Past guests include John Harbaugh, ESPN's Adam Schefter, and Pardon My Takes, PFT, and Big Cat. So don't miss an episode of Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. Every Tuesday, exclusively on PodcastOne.com and the new Podcast One app. Just a sample of what's coming to Podcast One Sports.
All right, keep going here with your thoughts.
Well, since you just brought up, you kind of touched on mid-engine just a minute ago before the break with the S2000, I want to actually follow the mid-engine platform.
Okay.
And I want to list three.
All right.
That if you get the chance, you should drive these because they're very different animals, but they're all mid-engine.
Okay.
One is the MR2.
The Mr. 2.
Specifically go with the Spider, the last, as it was just fading away, because it's a very different animal dynamically than the Miata, even though it's a Miata competitor. Mm-hmm. And that those cars are cheap now, like $5,000-$6,000.
Yeah, they're really
cheap. The Miata, the MR2 Spider, you can get one, which is crazy. So that one has to be on the list. The Lotus in general, and I'm going to say pick a Lotus of the modern Lotuses, Elise, Exige, or Evora.
Okay.
Any of the above, because I think you'll understand one of the reasons that Paul and I both rave about them, even though I have much more love than he does. It's one of those cars that you always get out of and go, okay, yeah, totally. It's got a special feel.
Yeah, I could see myself owning those cars, probably an Evora, most likely.
For sure, for sure.
I've fallen in love with that 400, the new one.
Yeah.
It feels like Porsche quality build now with all the goodness of a Lotus. And that's what attracts me to
which is a handling steering feel that they do specifically. And of course the Cayman is on my mid engine list.
Sure.
Because the Cayman, honestly, I own the Lotus. The Cayman does mid engine about as approachable and well as you possibly can. The Lotus, especially like the Elise and the Exige, if you'd like a spin a car, because it's mid-engine, those Lotuses will provide you with the opportunity.
They do.
The Cayman, you would have to really do something staggeringly wrong to spin a Cayman.
The Elise
is just going to allow you to do it. If you're going to be a bonehead, it'll be fine. I'll spin. I'll just do that.
Yeah.
The Cayman is so well set up to not have the downsides of mid-engine, but still give you all the upsides. That's why I like both of those cars in comparison, because Lotus is, you want to know what mid-engine is? When it's really well set up, but all the good and bad, welcome to Lotus. The Cayman is all the good, kind of none of the bad, in mid-engine format.
So I've been looking at mid-engine Caymans, too, for sale. I found a 2008.
You mean the early ones, yeah.
Yeah, an 08 for $23,000, like 30,000 miles or something.
This is why we talk about them, because they're cheap now, comparatively.
Yeah, I'm thinking track car, maybe, something like that.
Well, but here's the thing, honestly. If you were shopping with $20,000 and you were really debating, should I get an 86 or a Cayman, it's hard for me as a lover of the 86 to say go 86.
Yeah.
Why not go Cayman? Come on.
I mean,
obviously it'll be more expensive to maintain.
Of course,
but
of course.
Come on.
I mean, just recently driving Chance's wife's car. She's grinning right now as I'm talking about her. she has an orange Boxster, and I just missed that platform. We went on a drive all together a while back,
about
a month ago now, and just going on that drive, I remember that platform and that my first Cayman. And not that I don't love mine. I'm in love with this Cayman GTS, but you know, I'm thinking, wow, they're cheap now.
Yeah, it's
unbelievable.
Amazing.
It's amazing. Really come down in price. 944 turbos are 16 to 18 grand.
And but so now, are these modern Caymans.
Modern
which
Caymans
is crazy.
Are almost the same price for 20 grand, as you said. Gosh,
well, I have to wonder two things.
Compelling move.
Completely. I wonder if those Caymans are going to keep dropping or if they're going to find a floor here in the upper teens. That's the first question. And then I'm also curious, what are those cars like when most of the used ones that are really cheap are running 200,000 miles? Are they – you have to constantly feed them parts money pits or are they kind of running and surprising all of us? I think that's to be determined at this point.
Yeah,
but I'm really curious
there
about
quite
it.
Yet. You know, in terms of mileage, I've seen some pretty high mileage, 130,000.
Yeah. Oh, that's
up there,
certainly out
but
there,
not
for
quite
sure.
200 yet.
So I'm just curious, as they get like really old, how are they? Mm-hmm. Are they cars that people are starting to get out of? Because like the 944 is one of those cars. Nobody denies that the 944 is great to drive and it's well balanced and all that. But everybody goes, yes, buy a 944 and bring the equivalent to what you just paid for. Just as an extra money to keep it running
that's
right.
That's for sure.
That's what everybody says on 944. So I'm curious about these Caymans and Boxers, the early ones, when they age to that point, what is their reality?
Mm-hmm. No, I'm looking. I'm all over the Porsche Club of America classifieds now.
We're always looking for no real reason. We just look because we can and we have the disease.
All right. There's a couple of Japanese manufacturers that we have not talked about up to this point that are truly benchmark cars. So I'm going to jump into the fourth generation Subaru WRX and the STI. So that is
good.
The current generation is actually a platform change, to my understanding, from 2016 forward, even though it's the same car. So we'll say pretty much the current generation WRX and STI, the modern cars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Staggeringly good for what you get for these cars. This is why we recommend them so much. You can beat on these cars.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
They're just good. Even the WRX just scampers when you rev it to 6,000.
I currently think
moves.
Because of the torque curve and because of the engine, which is the FRS with the turbo that it doesn't have, because of that engine, I actually currently prefer the WRX right now over the STI.
Do you? Okay.
I think the STI...
I mean, they are different motors. So,
absolutely. No, and the STI is that
definitely
same...
Definitely make power differently.
You know, ain't broke, don't fix it motor they've been using forever.
And they haven't.
Yeah, exactly. But I think the WRX is the more interesting car of the current lineup. But I'm also going to say, and I have these, of course, in my all-wheel drive listing, the other one that I think you have to drive is the 05, 06 range WRX.
Okay.
That generation, of course, that's the one that also was the Subaru at the same time.
But, that's right. That's right.
But that gen, I feel like, was a high watermark for those cars. And I'm not restricting it to just 05, 06, like 05 to 08. It's that range, that model range. So it's like two back from the current one, if you will. That was a really great era for those cars. And they're pretty cheap now. I mean, 10, 15 grand gets you a nice one.
Yeah, which is,
so,
which is cool.
You know, you compare that to the current WRX, the new one, that's going to be 25 to 30, and you've got, you know, jump down in price, which is helpful. And those are really, really good cars. Now, most of them are high mileage at this point, but they're still Subaru Lego, so you can keep them running.
You know, what's interesting about most all of the cars we've named so far are all manual transmissions. I mean, there's a few exceptions in here,
but
most of them are all manuals. And there's not too many more choices in manual transmission categories.
Well, but, I mean, a lot of these you can get either way, but you're right. We're, of course,
Mercedes
thinking about them.
Mercedes is nowhere on my lists, you know?
I've got them up in the higher levels. But
do you?
Yeah.
For different reasons?
Mm-hmm. But I think all of these we've got, you can get some of them in automatics. Some of them got good automatics, dual clutches and stuff. In the all-wheel drive category, I do have three others I need to list.
Okay.
If we're talking all-wheel drive, you want to experience all-wheel drive. The WRX is kind of a Subaru is kind of an obvious. You have to be there.
Mm-hmm.
That's 50-50. Yep. It's funny. You put a Subaru up on a lift, and you spin the left front wheel, and you watch the right rear wheel spin at the same speed.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just everything. You just go, oh, that's how that works.
Yeah, it's pretty fun to see, actually.
As a result, drive the Golf R, because it isn't that way, because it's the Haldex system.
Right,
and see if you can have the chance to drive it hard enough to feel the back half of the car engage.
Yeah, when it comes alive.
Because it is essentially a front-wheel drive car until the system decides, oh, the back wheel needs to do something. And you can feel it. If you push hard enough, you can feel it. That's the reason to drive that Golf R. And the Golf R is great in its own right, but I'm just comparing it specifically in feel because of that Haldex engaging those clutches. And while I'm staying with differences in feel, Evo X
versus
Focus RS.
Okay.
Because the Evo X does what the GTR does for half the money or a third of the money, where it's moving power around, but it's doing it so well, you kind of can't stay ahead of it. It's done it already.
Yeah, I'm wondering about Evos and their long-term reliability.
Fair.
The Evo 10 is on my list. If you haven't driven this car and you can't drive the WRX or the STI and think, I've seen that part of the country, you know. No. It's such a different car. And, I mean, yeah, again, the way it makes power, the high-strung nature, that motor is completely different. And I just think, all right, Evo 10s, yeah, they're getting pretty cheap. They're starting to get there.
But they're getting cheap and they're getting old. What's going to happen?
Parts and reliability, and it's a high-strung car held together with makeup and straps.
Yeah.
So, you know, what's going to happen to these cars?
I would almost say that
car,
clearly I have, you can see the pattern in me, but I would almost say that car is like the Lotus Elise of all-wheel drives.
Sure.
They stitched together all the great chassis stuff. And by the way, we brought a body and some interior pieces with it, and I'm sure the alarm's going to freak out. But, you know, there's these kind of things.
Yeah.
But watch our Focus RS piece, where we have the STI and the Evo and the Golf R up next to the Focus RS, because I like the Focus RS. But what I find fascinating about it, and I'm spoilering the piece a little bit, but what I find fascinating about it is the Focus RS is moving all that power around, but you can feel it happening. Which isn't a slight against it. It's just you can feel the car working on it. Whereas the Evo, I feel like I never knew what it was doing. It just did it. It's just done now. And I kept going, how did Mitsubishi, who's making what, the Mirage and some SUVs that no one's buying? I mean, I hate to say it, but it's true. How are they doing this?
Mirage and not in a good way. Yeah, it's that Mirage on the horizon. Yeah, but we're not heading that direction.
It's nail polish color and you want to drive it off a cliff. Congratulations.
Well, unless you have any more, you know, sort of lesser priced, easily affordable kinds of cars, I've got four on here that are kind of nutty.
I've covered all my drivetrains below 50, so
have
I'm
you?
Happy to go onto the nutty list for sure.
All right. So, again, these are cars if you've got the chance. All right. So, we've covered, you know, all these other cars.
Mm-hmm. Sure,
that,
sure.
You know, as I said, you can get into. I'm going to start with any Caterham. If you can get into any Caterham, say yes.
Yeah.
Go drive that car.
Yeah. Pour yourself into the cockpit, mind you.
Remove the steering wheel and then jump in.
And vital limbs you won't need for driving because you're going to need every little piece of you to get in there. Yeah.
I'm also going to say any Audi R8.
Okay.
Mid-engine, all-wheel drive. What a brilliant car, even from the first generation way back in 2008.
My favorites are the early 4.2 with the gated shifter.
That's cool,
a moment in time in Audi, for sure.
And you think, all right, you see Audis around and, you know, the R8s, I mean, and, you know, there's so many hypercars, supercars out there, and you think, all right, the R8's kind of whatever. It's a brilliant car.
It's a very cool car.
It really is. And, you know, those cars, those early generations, I mean, they're well under 100 now. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily a bargain, but, you know, just saying. Put that out there.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm also going to say any McLaren, because McLaren for me is the big daddy Lotus. It's like the Lotus thinking on a grand scale.
I think that's a great description. And I had the exact same thing. My description here was McLaren, pick one.
Yeah,
I don't care what model, just pick one.
Jump in a McLaren if you have that opportunity, holy cow. And then finally, this is out there. I don't think this car is on your list.
Okay.
I know Chance is going to like this.
Now I'm intrigued.
Any Shelby Cobra, any replica Shelby Cobra, any real one, I don't care what it is. I don't care who makes it. If it's got... Okay. You know, if it's the
recipe done right,
to the,
I get what you're saying.
To the Kirkham, to the Super Performance, I don't care, but you got to feel that short wheelbase, wide car with a monster engine that wants to kill you. It wants to kill you as soon as possible. It doesn't want to toy with you like a cat with a mouse. It just wants to kill you as soon as it can.
Yeah.
It's looking for every opportunity. You've got to drive a Shelby Cobra.
I like it.
The end.
That's
it might sound a little cliched, and you see the guys out on Sundays, and they're just cruising around
and flipping
the throttle, but there's kind of a reason.
Sure.
You got to get yourself in this.
Very good list. I'm going to run through mine real quick. The car that is not what you think it is on my list is the Corvette C7.
Okay, fair enough.
If you haven't driven this car, if you get a chance to, do not for a split second think, oh, I know what Corvettes are like, or Corvettes are not for me. The C7 might be for you. The C7 is a great, great car. So let that car surprise you. Another car in the let the car surprise you. I actually did this. This is really out there, and then I'm going to come more to kind of stuff we normally talk about.
Okay.
But go see what a performance SUV can do and drive a BMW X5 M.
Oh, I didn't see that coming.
Because every time I drive one of those, especially when we've had them at like Motor Press track days, I get in it going, all right, let's see what this is about again. And I get out of it going, I can't believe a bunch of engineers got together, took that chassis, and made it do that.
And you're passing other cars in corners.
It's a monster. And it's a fantastic representative of that class of vehicle. Pick your heavy-duty AMG Mercedes or your Cayennes or whatever. But I really think that X5 M is a unique standout in that category of just, you want to see what performance SUVs are all about? Try one of these on. So that's why that's out there. We mentioned the Hellcat Charger earlier, but a couple others I want to talk about. You mentioned McLarens. Thanks for covering that. A car that this one's out there because I don't know that you'll ever have the chance, and I can't believe I had the chance.
Okay.
The 911 GT3 RS40. That is the 997 generation GT3 with a very limited edition 4-liter engine. That was a very rare car. That car's worth like $500,000 now.
Yeah.
I can't believe
those
we drove
in
one.
Price.
No, they're worth a lot. I can't believe we had the chance to drive one in our Icon film. And in spite of the fact that
years,
I'm not a,
you mean 50 years in the 911.
Sorry, 50 years in the 911. Yeah. Yes. In spite of the fact that I'm not a guy that runs to 911s. If I ever had the opportunity to own one of those cars, I would do it in the next breath.
And the 997 chassis speaks
and
to
I
you
like
a
the
lot.
997 chassis. And yeah. Jumping off of that, if you have the opportunity to compare that to the 991 GT3, that is an interesting seismic shift in Porsche's hyper-performance cars. Because my issue with the 991, which is a crazy sentence to begin with because it's an unbelievably capable car, but I think it's gotten too big. For me personally, the guy that likes little cars, I can feel that it's noticeably larger than that 997, which is why that RS 4.0 is just – that's the business for me. Mm-hmm. So there's that.
I can see that.
I want to say that I would like – this is almost the other part of Alex's question. I would like to drive more Ferraris.
You would.
I would, because Ferraris have a flavor about them that is all their own.
I agree. And I'm just not attracted to them. I mean, recently, less and less am I attracted to them.
But we've had less experience that I would like in them, and I'd like to drive more of them.
Okay.
Because they have their own character. And so that's why I'm going to say, if you have an opportunity to drive, I sound like Ferris Bueller now. If you have the opportunity, I highly recommend picking one up. But honestly, if you have the opportunity to drive a Ferrari, they are a unique animal and you should drive them for that reason. A couple others really quickly. The Rolls-Royce. Just because you get in a Rolls-Royce and you suddenly go, oh, that's where the money went.
Yeah. All of your money.
Look,
Rolls Royce.
Exactly. I'm an enthusiast little car guy. These are not a car I would ever gravitate toward. But I will admit to having gotten in on an auto show and closed the door and pressed the buttons and gone, oh, I see. I'm not even moving.
This is why they sell cars.
I'm not even moving and now I see. Because the point of it is not even about the fact that you're moving. It's about the fact that you're interacting with the interior and the feel of it and it's absurd. So there's that.
I hear they're adequate.
Yeah, I'm sure they're adequate. Yeah, there's a running joke about Rolls Royce. And then my last one on this list is the alternate to the 911 that I'm so impressed with, the Mercedes AMG GT.
Oh.
It is – when I drove it on a track a couple years ago, and unfortunately due to schedule, you didn't have the chance.
Yeah. And I'd still like to get in that
car. It was the best combination I can think of between the flavor of a 911 mixed with a full-on muscle car. It was somehow that in a blender, and I just thought if you've got 911 money and you're shopping in this world, you have to drive that car, because depending upon who you are personality wise, it may speak to you over the 911 because it has an attitude that the 911 just doesn't.
I haven't lifted the hood on that car, but is that technically front mid engine? Is it fully behind the rear wheels?
I wouldn't be surprised because it's got that huge hood. I would have to see it and really think about it. I'm pretty sure it is.
Really? I'd have to look.
I'm pretty
sure it is.
Somebody's
going to look and correct us.
Yeah.
All right. So
that was exhaustive. And I'm exhausted as a result. We aren't even going to do a car debate because there's just no time. We should do a few questions, though.
We do have questions. And jumping off onto Instagram here, switching gears just to aesthetics only, JMH9705 is asking, what's the best looking convertible? Of course, this is very subjective. We could go in many different directions. You know, if we're going to talk in the history of cars
in history,
or in the last
ever
year. I mean, you know, the E-Type Jag has got to be up there if we're talking best looking convertible ever made. But I think you're kind of asking, in general, of the cars that are on the road right now that you kind of see around.
Okay.
I'm going with the 991 911 with its magnesium roof panels that comprise and keep the nice shape of that
roof.
It does
do a really good job of copying the coupe shape with the top up.
It
that's
holds
hard
that,
to do.
And that's because of those magnesium inserts in that in the cloth there, in the cabriolet. Mazda RF is on the list.
I think that's very true.
I don't know if you can really classify it as a convertible.
It's possibly a Targa by comparison, I see what you're doing. Yeah,
that's
for sure.
It's a beautiful car.
Yeah.
And then finally, the Jaguar F-Type. I like that car in convertible form.
That is cool looking. I'll give you that as
top
well.
Top up, top down. Mm-hmm. I dig that
car.
It's
just a good looking car, yeah.
So, yeah, you know, subjective. That could also change, you know, in the next 5 minutes. But, you know, I'm going with those three for right now.
I hadn't really thought about this, but as we're talking it through, I'm going to say S2000.
Okay.
Because the thing about the S2000, it's, look, you put an S2000 next to an E-Type, it's not interesting. But it is, it's timeless. It's such a form, just an unfussy form that I think with the top down, it has that great wedge shape. It looks like a doorstop. And I mean that, honestly, in this case, I actually mean that as a compliment.
I would say more with the top down. With the top up, it's a little bit
But when I'm thinking convertible, I'm thinking, how do these look with the top down? And I think the S2000 with the top down does this great doorstop, timeless, simple shape that I do think works.
Mm.
I don't know that it's the most gorgeous thing ever, but I just think it works. I think it's going to work 20 years from now.
Yeah, I agree. Anyway. All right, excellent question. You know, we had to, you know, throw that in there just for sake of flavor. What else you got?
Joe Carr, I want to talk on this real quickly. He asked off of Facebook. We've talked about winter tires a lot. We've talked about if you're going to drive in snow, don't get all seasons or don't count on your all seasons, get winter tires. He just bought that new category of all weather tires. What
do
you think?
Right.
All weather tires, if you don't know, Nokian, we're a big fan of Nokian tires for full winter tires. They do it just about better than anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Nokian is one of the companies, and I think Continental, somebody's going to correct me, I think Continental is the other company that's doing all weather tires. The difference is this is a, if you want to think about it this way, it's an all-season idea for a tire, but they are fully snow-rated, which all-season tires are not.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Joe,
right.
I have not experienced these myself yet. I think the idea is fantastic. What it says to me is if you're in a place that doesn't get snow all the time but has those winter temperatures, this may be the fix. This may be your year-round tire fix. I haven't had a chance to personally experience them. I would like to. But if they've solved, honestly, I think the harder part of this equation is if you've got them actually snow rated, how have you solved the other part of the equation when it's 70, 80 degrees outside?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That's where the winter tires start to feel really weird normally. So if they've really solved that, I think that it may be the better solve than the all season.
Mm. Oh, I like that. Super quick question from ENT on Facebook as well. He's asking about a high performance driving event insurance. Asking for recommendations, Ian, I have not actually used an insurer for a particular high-performance driving event day myself, but I've heard a lot of Porsche owners talk about Lockton Motorsports, Lockton Insurance.
Okay.
This is not an ad, but I've seen it advertised a lot, and they are definitely in and amongst the Porsche community and,
of course,
high-performance driving community. And sometimes, you know, when we're in Germany or we're at various places, you know, the car, folks renting us the car there might provide the insurance there. So it just kind of depends. But generally speaking, your regular insurance isn't going to cover a track day event.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a few of them out there. You can Google that and look around. But I know Lockton is definitely ingrained in the enthusiast category there too.
That's good. A. McFarlane on Instagram asked, what car that's currently out right now do we feel like needs an update the most?
Oh, I've got
one.
And
he brought up the STI.
Sure.
But you know what I think desperately needs it more than anything I can think of?
Hmm.
The Z car.
I was going to say the Z.
Were you?
Yeah.
Nissan,
waiting for
where are you?
Yeah, I feel like they're delayed for some reason just in, resources have been marshaled for other projects.
For
maybe
sure.
It's electric. Maybe it's autonomous.
For
maybe
sure.
It's something else that has taken designers and people off of the Z car project because, wow, that thing is just, it needs a fresh.
And here's a car that for them has so much history. Mm-hmm. It has so much history, and it's been such a good car for so many generations, and it's just being allowed to just, well, keep stamping the body panels and selling them, I guess. It's too bad. It's a genuinely really good car that unfortunately right now is overpriced.
Yeah,
and desperately needs an update. It's unfortunately like the GTR. It's an oddball on the rest of Nissan's lineup. They care about the GTR because it's the halo car, and the Z car is left in limbo.
Mark B on Facebook is asking about what is a good car to learn manual because he's a pretty new enthusiast. This is also not an ad, but I'm going to say Turo. Go Turo a car. Because you don't have to show some sort of, yes, I'm authorized and I know how to drive a manual when you rent a car off Turo.
You're going to terrify the owner, but I take that point.
You don't have to tell them that. You can just go find a manual transmission car and go learn. I mean,
But I have an answer for a type of car, though.
Oh, for a type. Okay. I'm just honestly, saying anything I see with a manual transmission.
But honestly,
fine.
You know, when we were just in Germany, mm-hmm. we rented the Seat Leon, mm-hmm. which is essentially a GTI. the Golf in any form, GTI through normal Golf, through TDI, through, hey, it's now badged to something else, doesn't matter. That is one of the simplest manual transmissions to drive on the planet as far as nothing is hard and fights you. The mm-hmm. car really, really wants to work and not stall. It's such an easy toe in the pool of manual transmissions. Anything in the Golf lineup will treat you really well to just learn the basics and not feel like the car is trying to fight you at all.
So you brought up Ferrari earlier.
I did.
And on Twitter, Brandon, he is SlickMoney007.
I liked this question too. Keep going.
What is the product that has a car maker's logo on it that you dislike the most? The one that makes you shake your head in disbelief. Mm-hmm. It's anything and everything from Ferrari. I mean, the shirts, okay, some cool clothing, some cool jackets.
Yeah, they went nuts though, didn't they?
But they have roller coasters in Dubai.
Yeah.
And they have shot glasses, bed sheets, mm-hmm. stuffed animals, mm-hmm. toy cars, all the garbage that you associate with anybody but Ferrari.
By the way, we sell cars too. Yeah.
And they sell very expensive at the top end of the market. And this is a way for us to get a piece of Ferrari that we'll never otherwise have?
You're bumping up against the other irony of Ferrari. The irony of Ferrari, and that's actually not my answer here, but I do want to speak to this. But the irony of Ferrari is this. If you would like to buy the actual product we know them for, a Ferrari, you kind of can't have one.
Right.
But if you'd like to buy any ridiculous other piece of item with our logo slapped on it, well, anybody can walk in and buy that. I find that so – I don't even know if there's another product in the world where that's the case, where you can't – it's incredibly difficult to get the actual thing the brand was created for, but the brand is available everywhere else
just
for you.
The more I hear about this, the more I'm tired of the snobbery of Ferrari, even though – I mean, here we are talking about that, you know, the top end of the market.
It's out of reach of anything real. I'd get that.
Porsche is now with the GT3 Touring. They're kind of sticking it to all those 911R owners,
sure,
as we've talked about, and they're making themselves accessible. If you want to spend money and throw down on a hot McLaren, they will find a car. They will sell you a car.
Sure, you walk in with money and you can buy a product.
Buy our stuff.
Crazy.
So I like that mentality better mm-hmm. than Ferrari, even though, yes, there's plenty of used car sites where you can find Ferraris, pretty new ones for sale, but you can't spec it out how you like, and you can't, mm-hmm. you know, do anything. You just, here it is. Here's the price.
A brand that makes it hard to buy their product, which is crazy. I want to speak to Brandon's question real quickly, though, and that is the car logo thing that I don't understand on any product is always child seats. If you're a parent, and Ferrari has done it, but a lot of other brands have done it too. Here is our branded child seat. If you're a parent, you want the latest and greatest child seat, because the other thing that's funny in car seats with kids is you can't buy last year's model. Last year's model is a death trap. Well, all the kids survived in it last year. that happens all the time. Let's make sure that's not a racket.
That's true.
But if you're a parent, you want to find the best car seat that fits your car, that fits your budget, that has the features you need. You just need to afford it, and it needs to work. And also, you need to understand that it's going to get destroyed. It's going to have spit up and, oh, look, juice is on it again.
Sure.
The last thing that needs to happen is to now gouge a parent further with, why don't you buy our car seat, which is the same car seat you could get for a third of the price, but we just slapped our logo on it.
Look, ridiculous. It's a Sparco. I mean, racing, you've got to have this seat, right?
Well, but yeah, I just, oh, man.
What else? Well, last question for me is from Dale. He was one of our co-drivers for the 24 Hours of Le Mans race mm-hmm, mm-hmm. that we recently did up in Seattle at Ridge Motorsports Park. Dale, thank you for writing in. He's asking, when will we see the Stinger review? And I saw the Kia Stinger at the Frankfurt show. I can't wait to get in this car. And I will say, as soon as the Kia folks get back to me and we can get in that car.
We've asked, for sure.
But
for sure.
Yeah, looking forward to getting in that. I'm endlessly intrigued by this car.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm very excited. I've got one last question. That was Christoph asking, would we rather see more driver-focused enthusiast cars at the 40 to 60 grand range so that we can dream about them and then buy them used? Or would we like to see manufacturers doing it at the Mazda Speed Fiesta ST level of 20 to 30 grand? Christoph, I'm going to say the problem with sports cars in general is that for most people, that is your disposable money. You can't go buy one as your primary car. I mean, I'm a weirdo and I do. But in general, you can't go buy one as your primary vehicle. It's your toy. So I'm going to say, based on that, I want the 20 to 30 grand variation where you can go get a brand new sports car. I'm not saying 20 to 30 grand is cheap throwaway money. It's real money.
Oh, yeah.
But
oh, yeah.
At the same time, really good driver cars at that level, most of the time they don't do them. That's why the 86 and Fiesta ST and Miata are such a big deal. I would love to see options. We talked about it. Why didn't GM do one last time? I'd love to see options at that range. It's hard to make the numbers work, but I think it would allow more people to do what we want on this show, which is don't dream about it. Get a car you love, because that's starting to get into money you might actually have.
You know, I'm in complete agreement, surprisingly.
It happens. It happens.
For accessibility, just to get into something fun that you really love. I mean, where is the Honda 2001 or the S3000 or whatever it's going to be called?
Yeah, for sure.
Where is that car that's the next iteration? Still beautiful, but come on, that's accessible to us, to everybody. That's what I'm looking for. That's why I love the N division from Hyundai.
Yeah.
I'm loving
I'm glad
the
they're
I30N.
It, for sure.
Which will be, I guess, the Elantra, whatever.
We'll see what they do.
Maybe. Yeah. I love that feel, that concept. I love the accessibility of that, that it could work in your life. It's four doors, yet it's still fun. I mean, the GTI speaks to that all day long.
Yeah. It's
you know, one of the originators of that concept. But I'm with you. The 20 to 30, I prefer that. Well, guys, thank you again for listening. We're really, really happy you wrote in. And
for
Alec,
sure.
Thank you again for this really fun question.
Yeah, 4 hours later, we think we've covered your question. Yeah.
No, it was really interesting. Thank you, guys. As we've said before, write to us with your debates at everydaydrivertv@gmail.com and the website everydaydriver.com. And then for fun questions like this, like Alex, find us on all the social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, blah.
And I'll say the thing I haven't said in a while. If you're sending emails furiously to everydaydriver@gmail, you're not reaching us. It's got to be everydaydrivertv@gmail. There's somebody out there with the everydaydriver@gmail account that's getting doesn't understand where they're getting randomly spammed. Okay? So everydaydrivertv@gmail is where to reach us directly, and of course through the website. We appreciate the guys that you guys have been rating us and sharing us since we've been asking about that. We really appreciate that. We hope for more, and we will talk to you next time.
Yes. Massive thanks. Cheers.